Today on our show, unfathomable pinheadery is afoot, so everyone grab a copy of Organ Fish of Clues 9 and strap in, because we're talking about Fargo Season 3, Episode 2, The Principle of Restricted Choice. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV super fan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Ooh, yeah.
It's your party jam.
Oh, yeah. I love some good gypsy punk.
Some good gypsy, some Gogo Bordello to close out the episode that we watched to begin our episode here today. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the ABTV Fargo After Show. I am Lex Michael. I'm all over social media at the Lex Michael, and I am here with...
I'm Dave Child. You can find me at MrDaveChild on Twitter and Instagram, or DaveChild.com. I'm Dave Child.
Awesome. I am Tara Erickson. You guys can find me on Twitter at TheTaraErickson or YouTube.com/TaraErickson.
And as always, you can keep up with us in the chat if you are watching live. If not, you can use Twitter, hashtag ABTVFargo. Of course, go on to iTunes where you can like, subscribe, give us 5 stars. As is well documented, I need those 5-star reviews to live.
To survive. Yeah. That's what he eats on.
So we're back for the second episode this season. First of all, right off the bat, second episode, chapter 2 of this 10-chapter, third season story. How do you guys feel?
I'm still liking it. I still think it's good. It's nice to now get more in depth with a little bit of the characters, find out. What I like about the show is there's still surprises with each character every single episode. We're still learning who these characters are. So I feel like we got a lot of that this episode.
Yeah, I realized why Molly makes the perfect detective.
Okay.
Because she's invisible, and when we get into it, we can talk about it later. But I'm just saying, I really enjoyed that Gloria.
You said Molly.
Oh.
Which is...
Oh, God, the...
Season, that's...
Gloria,
it's
Gloria,
okay.
Gloria, my bad.
It's a really
bad.
Good... It's a one-to-one.
Yeah. Gloria, yeah. Yes.
Which, that was interesting, and I want to know if that moment where she turns to her coworker and says, "I'm here, right? You can see me."
Yes.
I was like, "Oh, okay." So there's your whole character right there. That's beautifully done.
That seems to be. I think it's going to be a running bit because it happened in the first episode. There was a door that didn't open for her.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And also she doesn't like her phone isn't working.
Right,
for
she's
her
getting bad cell reception.
Right. Yeah,
no one
and
can hear her.
She does. She's avoiding computers at all cost in the actual thing, so she doesn't work with technology,
right,
at all. And also, I think it's just, I think there's definitely the themes of not knowing, not having the rest of the world recognize who she is, which is something that's going on in her professional and personal life.
Right.
Because in professional life, she's not a chief anymore. She's being demoted, and she doesn't quite know who she is. And then in her personal life, her husband left her because he's gay and is now with another guy, so she's not being recognized anymore in that relationship. So she's still trying to struggle to be recognized and be noticed, even by doors.
Well, and speaking of, you know, her professional life and the current situation she finds herself in, she now finds herself working for Shea Whigham, who appeared for the first time in this episode. Another wonderful, just when you thought that this series could not sustain another fantastic character actor, all of a sudden, we've got some Shea Whigham, and he's wonderful. He was on Boardwalk Empire. He was just recently in Kong Skull Island.
Yeah.
He played a similar administrative authoritarian figure on Agent Carter in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of me, there's like, I hope that they don't repeat that dynamic with him and Gloria, the similar dynamic he had with Peggy on that show. But at the same time, dude's so good at playing those types of roles that I can't be mad about it.
Yeah, he's good at being the surly guy. He's good at being the that guy.
Every show needs one of those guys.
Yeah.
So right up top at the beginning of the episode, we see that, you know, Gloria's having a hard time sleeping, and so she gets up before dawn and she starts looking at these science fiction novels that she found in Ennis's basement. And it seems like she pieces together pretty quickly. Like, at first, it seems like she's not even sure what she's looking for. It looks like she's definitely searching for something. Hopefully, she'll figure out what it is when she finds it. And the author, whose name I gotta look at again, because the very
Thaddeus Mobley.
Thank you, Thaddeus Mobley.
Yeah.
Figures out, I think, pretty quickly that Thaddeus Mobley probably is the same guy.
Right. Doesn't... Yeah, it was super quick.
Yeah.
Well, when you have like a article cut out of winning
yeah,
an award,
the same. Yeah, totally.
It's kind of like, why are you going to keep that?
Yeah.
Unless you're like a scary fan or you're the actual person.
Right. So. That's true.
And again, so we have this issue of identity, a change in identity playing a significant role in one of these plot threads. And let's see, the cell phone issue. Yeah. Now I'm going through my notes and I'm like, what happened?
I mean, I also want to, before we move away from the new chief too much. Oh, also when she wakes up.
Yes.
It has that moment where she's thinking and you're flashing to all the, flashing to seeing her deal with the fact that her stepfather's now dead. And you see her kind of processing it. And then as soon as her son works into it, she has that moment where she's like, okay, okay. And then like gets up out of bed because she realizes, okay, I need to stop this person because of my son.
Right.
So it's, I think that's a way of, I think what we're going to find is a constant, her character finding her identity in being a mother and being someone to help out her son. And, her police work kind of going alongside of that, because that's what I'm guessing, because she's also, I believe, except for in season two, we do have a father who's working the case.
Right.
But right now we have a mother who's working the case with a teenage son. It's much older than our usual pregnant
right.
pregnant chief and cop kind of running the show. So I'm curious to see how that works into it. And also, Shea Whigham. Is that how you
say it? Yeah, Wickham.
Yeah, his the chief of Mo, he's actually he feels like an outside character too. He doesn't feel like he's part of the Fargo universe. He is coming from Boardwalk Empire. And I think that's an interesting dynamic.
Well, he comes in and he bristles at the fact that it's like, you don't even have computers here. Yeah. What are you guys doing? But I do like, and it's an interesting, it's a perspective thing that I really appreciate, because while she's having these images in her head, for example, we know, A, that Maurice is now recently departed. Mm-hmm. We also know that he was, at best, a screw-up and a burnout and not a demonic, powerful figure. But I love that her mental image of what this guy might be is like this howling, animalistic, almost like Bob from Twin Peaks.
Right.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, of course, it makes sense that that would be the mental image she has of this person who killed her stepfather, not knowing all of the things that we know. And I appreciate things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So, all right, while all of this is going on, we've got a couple of significant stories happening. There's a mug there. We've got a couple of significant stories happening elsewhere. We've got Emmett over here dealing with this VM Varga situation.
Yeah, which is a lot more complicated than I thought it was going to be, to tell you the truth.
So what we learned definitively is not to Google VM Varga.
Don't. And apparently there is a VMVarga.com. That they set up, and it's supposed to be very creepy, but I don't know if I want to click it. But it is there. I haven't clicked it yet, but it is available. So anyone could check out vmvarga.com or Google vmvarga.
Are you doing it right now?
Yep.
Oh, man. No. We saw what happened to Irv.
I think go to this one.
All right, describe.
Click to download information. It's an information thing.
Okay.
And then it takes you to Never Gonna Give You Up.
Oh, so they were
That's great.
Never
That's
gonna give you up.
Good job.
That's amazing. Good Thank job. Thank you for that.
Oh, man, they Rickroll you. That's
I
great.
Love
That's
cute. Everything about it. Okay.
So of course, Emmett and Cy are explaining the situation, and Irv is very understandably going, wait.
Oh, poor Irv.
It's like, but he's like, wait, you, what does the VM stand for? And they can't tell him. So it's like, you borrowed $1 million from somebody, and you quite literally don't know what their name is.
Yeah.
But right. So... it becomes clear that obviously Emmett and Cy don't realize, I think, at this point, the severity of the situation that they're in. Their solution is, well, can't you just find him on Facebook and we'll go get him? It'll be fine. We'll take care of this. It's fine. We'll make this problem go away. Of course,
Irv doesn't know what Facebook is.
Right.
Irv has no idea what Facebook is.
Irv doesn't know what Enter is.
No. Oh my God. That was such a perfect. I love how it's like, we'll set Irv on this case.
Yeah.
Irv will know what to do.
Uh-huh.
And he does not know how to Google. He's never Googled in his life.
Ever. No.
He needs some help.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's that moment when he's working on Google, asking what the enter button is, finds it and downloads something immediately, which is the first rule of the internet.
Yeah. And the fact that he's like, the power's out? Maybe the power's out. And she's like, the lights are on. I'm like, how did you make it this far in life, Irv?
Yeah, and how creepy is it to press download and then all of a sudden see an image of yourself,
a picture of you
on your computer?
The fact they weren't screaming blows my mind. They were just like, "Well, what is that?"
Oh, it's the computer doing its thing.
Yeah,
right. And it's of course they don't know enough to be terrified by what just happened. And of course, maybe quite possibly, if they had been a little more tech savvy, Irv might have known to watch his step, and he may still be with us today.
He may still be with us. Still be stepping.
Yeah.
So, all right, while this is going on, Irv now is snooping a little bit. But while this is going on, Emmett and Cy are also trying to deal with Ray. Ray, and yeah. I thought it was interesting, we hold off on Ray entering this episode till about the half-hour mark. There's a lot of moving pieces to deal with before we even bring him back into the story. And the, you know, very thankfully for Ray, he discovers, okay, Maurice's death has been ruled accidental. Yeah. All we have to do is, all right, we put out a bolo on him like we would normally do, and this will go away. We're all right. Although there was this moment where he froze and he had to have his coworker remind him that he had to put a bolo out.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, now granted, his coworker seemed to be very... not too far off of the type of personality that Ray himself is. Mm-hmm. But I would say in a world where people make these little slip-ups and then someone later picks up on that little slip-up and that's what undoes them, I'm going like, Ray should have connected that dot for himself a little bit
right.
sooner.
Well, I also thought that he was waiting for the detective to tell him to put a bolo out so that it's more like, oh yeah, we discussed it and he knew that the guy was missing and I told him to put one out. Like... you know, like, I felt like it was a cover up your tracks, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning he wanted the other detective to tell him to do that.
Right.
So that he would remember that conversation a little bit better.
Sure.
To be like, oh no, Ray came in and he said he was missing. I told him to file a report.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He was also also smart enough to look up. Yeah. He looked up that in his office. So, like, not in his office, not in Ray's office.
But I also wonder, too, how, because that's specific, right? Like, there was a reason he couldn't use his computer, and he says vermin, like the wiring, it got all shredded.
But he didn't want the search history.
But is the search history not going to exist on somebody else's computer? And then that guy could then say, well, wait a minute, Ray was in here. And I remember that because it was weird that he didn't think to put the bolo out right away.
Yeah.
I just think he's just trying to be careful. And I think it's also like, hey, this guy is missing. I don't know what to do. And when you look it up, you're not going to remember at what time you do the search.
Right.
And at what time you were asked. So, like, he did the search and then he asked, but then he probably did the search again.
Right.
And then it came out. So it's probably actually pretty neat.
I mean, it's definitely, look, it's far from a smoking gun in any case.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I feel like tiny little things that you notice. Like, for example, the next thing that Ray does is he goes to see Nikki. And he walks right in the front door again. And that seems... to me, personally, ill-advised at best.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Especially since he's walking past where the guy was just murdered.
Right.
In order to go into her house.
And again, by itself, innocuous enough, you could come up with a story that would explain maybe what you're doing there, but it's a pattern of very small, because he's clearly, Ray's not the brightest.
No, he's dealing with urine all day. He's not dealing with murders.
Yeah,
he doesn't
yeah.
know what he's doing.
But I do have to say he's not the stupidest
one
we've had in the Fargo universe.
No, okay, but sidebar, if you had to pick who is the stupidest that we've had in the Fargo universe.
Ooh. Oh, Christ, I don't know. God, I have the worst memory.
I would say even William H. Macy in the initial movie is a bit stupider than Ray. Like, I think they're dealing with a lot of stupidity throughout it. I would say, you know, Kirsten Dunst's character is not necessarily stupid as is unstable.
I think she just moves further and further away from reality.
Yeah. So it's like, he's up there, but he's not like, I think there's people who are stupider.
For sure. Yeah. No, I think his biggest blind spot when it comes to intelligence as far as keeping himself out of prison or the ground is Nikki.
Yeah,
And again, he really does seem to be so genuinely into her, and for her, it seems very 50-50.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she tells him, you've got the soul of a poet, and he's like, really? I mean, it's just like putty in her hands. Like, she can control him any way she needs to, which I think is cool.
Yes. Now, he goes to tell her the good news, and she slaps him a couple times in the face because his chi is blocked.
Yeah.
Apparently, a good smack is...
she's all backed up.
It'll just rattle that chi loose.
Yeah. And not just one smack, like 2 to 3, I think it was.
No, it was definitely more than one. But they, so she's decided that we need to go, we're going to go get this stamp ourselves. And we get this wonderful sequence where they go to Emmett's house and Ray and Emmett have a conversation outside while Nikki goes and searches for the stamp. Yeah. More on that in a minute, so, because yikes.
Yeah, but during that moment, did you have a moment where you're not very sure if Ray knew she was in the house? I had this moment that I was like, I don't know if Ray knows about this, because the conversation they have, which is like, you're either going to have to make up with him or we're going to have to go to war. And to Ray, that meant, oh, I'll make up with him. And to her, that meant I'm going to war. But then they kind of ended up landing in a kind of a middle ground where it was like, okay, I'll make up with him. And then you steal the stamp. And meanwhile, he actually does make up with him and actually does have like this connection.
And he seems genuinely happy about it.
He does. Yeah. He seems like really relieved, like his cheese all back to order.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Nikki Swango, no.
Slaps him in the face in a different way.
Yep. She's swanging it down with some dirty tampons.
That mention. I did. Also, I want to build up, just because we got to go through the process of this, because I'm like, okay, I don't know if Ray knows Nikki is in the house. So I don't really know what she's doing, except maybe she's trying to steal the stamp for herself.
Right.
And then, that's just what I was, this is my thought process. And then when she sees the donkey, I'm like, okay, I don't get why she's freaking out over the donkey. Maybe she doesn't even know where the stamp is. More proof that she doesn't know, Ray doesn't know that she's in there. And then when she starts to take off her pants,
like, what is going on?
Did you have a moment where she's like, oh, she's going to try to seduce
him? I thought she was going to be naked. Yeah. In the bedroom, like, hey.
Like, hey.
Oh,
I'm going to go with the brother with hair.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the good-looking one.
Yeah.
Well, my reading of it was he knew that she was in there, but the plan, of course, was we're going to do this very quietly, very clean, and I'm not sure necessarily that he expected his talk with Emmett to go as well as it did.
Yeah.
Well, what's up with him saying, let's talk outside? It's 10:30.
Right.
Okay? First of all, he's like, did somebody die? It's just 10:30. But then his brother says, let's talk out here. And I'm like, really? And they're moving the snow off the thing and like...
I think that's the Midwestern, like, can't bother the wife.
Oh, right. Yeah, she's still asleep. But yeah, Christ, I mean, it's cold outside. Give me a break.
Yeah.
You can't just stay in the foyer and talk.
Yeah, but also...
I just thought it was hilarious because Ray did look at him like, seriously? Like, outside? You know?
How great was that shot with the two of them going around the car?
And then
they're the brushing it off. Two benches that look identical. Two brothers that are identical and are played by the same person.
Yep.
So it's kind of an impressive shot anyways. And then...
on either side of the Corvette that one of them could have owned.
And I feel like the Corvette is the only thing that kind of breaks the symmetry of the shot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to being like, yeah, that piece of shit Corvette.
Yeah.
That's like, of course, the thing that kind of breaks the mode.
Right. Well, you can read that imagery literally in that the Corvette was a big part of what blew open a schism between the two of them in the first place.
Yeah, between the two of them. And also, I love how there is the scene before this where Emmett is very much like reaching out, being like, I want to make up with my brother. And it's Cy that's like, no, don't do it. He's a loser.
Right.
He's a loser. Don't do it. And he's like, no, I'm going to do it. And so when they do make up, it's like, oh, this does make sense, because both of them really do want to make up.
Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, too, it has to be genuine, because as soon as they figure out what ultimately has happened, Emmett knows right away. He's like, oh, Ray did this. And while we were talking outside, he had his fiance come in here and do this. He knew. He knows his brother that well.
Mm-hmm.
So there must have been a moment where something occurred to him that maybe this is not on the up and up, and he still went out and had that conversation anyway, because I agree. It seems like he really did genuinely want to reconcile if there was any opportunity to do so.
Yeah.
And there may well have been, but as it turns out, Nikki's a little crazy. there's... Before we...
And menstruating.
And but it's reading the donkey picture as a personal attack.
That was a very, that's, I feel like this is a very Fargo misunderstanding, which happens a lot. People's like ire gets brought up and they get the green-eyed envy, and also like, this is a personal attack, even though it's just not. It's the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So the fact that she sees it as a personal attack and then just takes a step and be like, this is, I mean, we were going to be nice and just steal a stamp. And that was going to be our nice move. But now it's personal with a donkey picture.
With a donkey. And of course, as it turns out, the cleaning lady broke the frame and Emmett's just right. having the frame repaired. But of course, they don't know that. And taking it as the most egregious of all personal effrontery.
Yeah.
We see that then he takes off her pants, writes, who's the ass now in menstrual blood on the frame, and then leaves the used tampon
in the drawer.
My face upon that reveal. Now, in the moment, of course, the emotions were running high.
I think I know exactly the Lex face that actually happened. Probably like.
It was. It was very. Yeah. It was that. It was a little. The jaw was a little further down. It was more like.
Yeah, there you go.
It was like a ghost face of thing. It's but like emotions. Emotions were very high in that moment. That's horrifying.
So did you see that once you saw, once we saw like, who's the ass now?
I knew right away because the why would she say, don't get any, I'm on my period. And then her pants. And I was like, oh my God, that's blood. But then the tampon on top of it, I was like, holy tamale. Whoa.
I thought it was going to maybe be a drawer full of shit. I thought it was going to be that.
She was
going to
poop in the drawer. I thought she was going to poop in the drawer. Mr. Dave Child.
But then I sort of realized after it was like, oh yeah, well she wrote it. Because it was so clean that it was almost, she obviously used the tampon.
I guess.
As a marker.
Yeah, so it could have been like, it could have been red lipstick or something until you see it in the actual.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it was a good like, it was a good FU.
And I'm wondering now, how do you top that? Like, how do you, in a moment,
you
as far
shit
as,
in a drawer.
I was about to say, maybe the reason she didn't do that.
What can
she
do in a drawer next?
Right, is like,
that's
you
the
have
important
to,
question.
You can't shit in it because you have to leave yourself somewhere to go. But once you leave a bloody tampon, right. I feel like how do you break the ceiling
right,
there?
Right,
it's the height.
Yeah.
What was the line? Is the beautiful poetic sentiment of feminine hygiene deployed as a weapon?
Oh, yeah. yes, exactly. Yes, I said that. Feminine hygiene deployed as a weapon.
I'm loving Sai so much in this episode. I feel like he had the best moments of the episode. I feel like he won the day in just like his little assumptions, his little like lines. And we're going to get to that later, but I just love Sai.
Well, and I love too that you cast an actor like Michael Stuhlbarg, who's an absolutely wonderful actor, frequently playing these slightly ineffectual, nebbishy guys. Look at his work in The Coens, A Serious Man. I think that to me is like a perfect template for what I think of as like a Michael Stuhlbarg performance.
Right.
He's not that guy here, but you get a little bit of a sense of like how powerful actually is this guy. Like when he's doing things like slamming down on the table, for example, right. I'm going like, that's like a big gesture for you, dude. Hang on. But then you get a sense of, no, like, dude's a little, not only on top of his business, but a little crazy also.
Yeah, but he's also not like Michael Stuhlbarg in Boardwalk Empire. He's not like that conniving chess master that's kind of in that series.
But he's still like, let me step in. I'll take care of Ray. Get him out of the way.
Yeah.
And you're like, what way? No, not a lot, though. Just a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like it's A Serious Man thinking he's
Arnold
guy
Rothstein from
Boardwalk
from
Empire.
Boardwalk.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where he lands. It's just like, I am going to step in, but it's just not going to help.
And he says, basically, I'm going to take point on this. He says, all right, well, he's done now. We're not going to hurt him. Like Emmett still knows exactly what Ray did. He knows that he was trying to take advantage of him again to steal his property. Even still, doesn't want to see his brother hurt. But Sai says, no, we're going to deal with it. We're not going to hurt him, but he is dead to us.
Right.
And I'm going to go and I'm going to essentially break this connection. Mm-hmm. And they go and they have that scene in the diner between the two of them, which is great. And I had that moment again, and I feel like at multiple times throughout this season, I'm just going to pause and marvel at the work that Ewan McGregor is doing. Mm-hmm. But I had this moment in that scene where I went, oh, that's what Michael Stuhlbarg was just playing a scene with him a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
But this does not feel like the same
person. It's a totally different
slightest.
Dynamic. It's these two, the two brother characters are so distinct. I don't think of them as the same actor. It's great.
In the earlier scene, when they're talking to each other, I had to actively remind myself, this is both the Obi-Wan guy.
I would suggest stop doing that. You're watching a TV show.
No, but I have to. I don't pull myself actively out of the story, but every so often I have this inner voice that goes, just like, pause for a second, think about it, sit in it, absorb it, let it make your heart sing. All right, we're back in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I did the same thing. The second, Emmett came out to talk to the people who came into the office, I was like, shit, like, he's not Rey right now. Sorry, excuse my language, but you know what I mean? Like, I had
that.
We've been saying.
Have we? I don't know. Yeah. I'm like, internet. Duh. Okay, anyway. But I felt the exact same way in between the scene where they're at the office and then cut to the diner. I did kind of have that reckoning where I was like, dang, they're the same. That's crazy to me. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. His dark eyes kind of bug me. Emmett's dark eyes, because when he plays Rey, I think it's his natural eye color that I'm used to seeing with Ian, but he has contacts.
I didn't even notice that.
Oh my gosh, the they're blues, like all right? brown. You can even see his pupils, and I'm just like, he looks,
Well, he looks like he, I like how both of them don't look like Ewan McGregor. Both of them have this weird, like, Emmett is a bit too pristine and kind of looks like he maybe had some work done or hair plugs or something.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, Ray's a...
And Ray is just clearly balding.
Yeah, yeah. With two separate pairs of shoes, which I kind of love.
Amazing.
Oh. So, obviously, as we saw, this meeting between Ray and Sai in the diner, it goes about as well as I think we could have expected. Honestly, Sai tells him, you are never going to see your brother again. Yeah. Makes a show of pulling out a 20, folding it over so it'll sit, and putting it in front of him and saying that is the last dime you will ever get from the parking lot king. And just to dig it in, too. Like, not from your brother, from the parking lot. Because he's not your brother anymore, bro. He's the parking lot king of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. My favorite part about this is they each had a moment where if you just stopped there, it would have been fine. Like, if it would have been... It would have been kind of a nice badass move, and then you could have kept going, but they kept trying to one-up each other. So I had this moment where he had the 20, and then Ray gave us all a gif we can use over and over again by flipping him off.
Yep.
And then they go to the... And it was like, okay, then that was enough. Like, that's all you need from that scene. And then when they go into the parking lot, Ray knocks on the window again just to make sure he sees him flipping him off again. And then it's like, okay, now we're going to step it up a bit. I'm gonna hit the car. And he backs up and he hits the car and Ray's freaking out. And then he drives away and he totally can't control it. So he ends up hitting another car and then going out. And I love that moment with the waitress. He's just like, that animal, look what that animal did to my car.
Yeah.
It was just a great, like, we're all in our own bubbles. We're all thinking of our own things. No one really cares about Ray's car.
But that's the one thing he had, basically. And like, you could do the work to fix some of that damage, but it's like, here's the one thing had left. The perfect symbol of every bad choice you made in your life. And I'm just going to smash that up, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is very much, I like it. It's like Michael Stuhlbarg's Larry Gopnik pulling an Arnold Rothstein, and that perfect nexus point is where this character seems to exist.
Right.
So, okay, I want to really quick, before we jump over to talking about all of this business with VM Varga, wanted to touch on the title of this episode and what it refers to. So the title of this episode, which is the principle of restricted choice, it is another bridge term like last week's episode, and it refers to a theory in bridge that playing a particular card decreases the probability of a player having any equivalent card. So it's essentially by playing one option, you are taking that option away from somebody else.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's a wonderful segue to go and talk about VM Varga, who's just now getting all up in everybody's business.
Right. It is that great moment of, like, when... Because I kind of thought... I think we talked in last week's episode about how, oh, he's going to make it a money laundering thing. And I think he is. But for some reason, I thought... I mean, this wouldn't be as interesting of a show. But I assumed that was going to be, oh, they're going to be getting shipments of money. And they're going to have to explain it away. I didn't think they were going to be so involved. Like, they were going to... That starts off with a giant truck.
Meaning, like, physically be there. I didn't think so either.
Physically be there.
Yeah.
And I thought they were going to just refuse to launder the money. And that's how things were going to break down. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they were actually going to take over the business.
Right.
In a big way.
And I had no clue how involved Varga was going to be. He says at the end of this episode, you're probably not going to see me for a couple of days. He's got to go deal with whatever it is that VM Varga goes and deals with.
Right.
But he seems to be very actively involved. It almost seems like he's the closest that we have so far this season to a character like Mike Milligan from last year. Very different personality-wise, but that almost ethereal type of sinister presence that is an active participant in the events that are unfolding.
Yeah.
Yeah, not as much of a psychopath as Malvo in the first season.
But Malvo's like almost just the devil.
Yeah, he's the devil. This is more of that, I think, Mike character. Like,
well, in that, when they're in the office, do you remember when VM says, he's like, well, we'll just buy more lots, maybe even a stadium. When they cut back to Emmett, he looks like he lights up a little bit. He's like actually legitimately being like, I could own a stadium. And then like cuts back to like, you're getting it now, like you're trapped. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, F-bomb. Like, yep, here we are. And there's the restricted choice. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I loved his line though at the very, very end. I just wrote this note down where he's like, you know, we can't have people out there investigating things with his creepy teeth. And I'm like, except I wrote Molly except Gloria can, because she's invisible.
Yeah, guys, that's true.
Seriously,
that's actually a good point, and that's something that happens in the Fargo universe as well. Mm-hmm. And I think why a lot of these police characters, especially the female police characters, are able to figure out who does what, because no one really notices them.
Nope.
And not that we couldn't have possibly found Irv another way, but how did VM Varga put the mark on Irv? It was using his own computer.
Right.
And as we've seen, Gloria's relationship with technology
is non-existent.
Fritzy at best.
She uses the telex.
So actually not searching for VM Varga the old-fashioned way of just talking to people and interviewing and writing them down in a notebook
is going
to
be
probably the best way of finding VM Varga.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Great. I do want to take a step back in the conversation when Emmett starts talking to, when Sy starts talking to Emmett about, you know that lot down in the so-and-so and how we don't sell it? And they're like, yeah, we need to. Why did I get that? We might build condos.
Oh, yeah.
And then Emmett says, like, you know what? We should talk to Stan Grossman about that. And Stan Grossman is a character from the Fargo movie, is the right-hand side of Wade Gustafson, who's kind of the sigh to that. And he's the guy that, like, William H. Macy's character tries to extort money out of, and that's the crime that goes wrong in the whole movie. So it's a great tie-in to like the initial movie, because I didn't even necessarily pick that up. I was like, wait, Stan Grossman, that sounds so familiar, and like it's from the Fargo universe. But now I'm like, it could be from two seasons or it could be from the movie.
Yeah.
So I looked it up and I was happy to see it was from the movie.
Yeah, there were a couple of little definitely explicit Cohen nods, and then a couple that I think might have been inferred or a little bit like more wink wink. Like the restaurant they met at was called Fontenelle's, mm-hmm. and I saw a couple people online speculating, is that a reference to Raising Arizona? Because there's a scene where Holly Hunter is handing off the baby to Nick Cage and she says, you know, watch his little Fontenelle. So I'm like, all right, that could be. And then, of course, the scene, which we haven't touched on yet, where Gloria is talking to the mortician about the arrangements for Ennis. And the reference to let's pick out a vessel. It was very much, I thought, echoing the scene in Big Lebowski where they're figuring out what to do with the remains of poor Donnie. Spoilers for Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I like also in that scene, just to touch upon that scene, how he doesn't remember that Gloria's mom died, but he does remember exactly where she is once he knows.
Right.
Once he's reminded that this person died. It was she's in section, blah, 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 blah. I thought that was perfect.
And everybody uses the phrase, it's a tragedy, when they talk about death.
It's a tragedy.
Emmett uses it, it's a tragedy. And then the funeral guy is like, it's a tragedy.
And I love that the kid was like, he was 83 or however old he was. And even the kid's like, well, I mean, this is messed up, but like, He had a good run.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they haven't used that more as the tagline for the Fargo show. Fargo,
it's a tragedy.
It's perfect. It always is. It always is a tragedy. That always ends with a big point of Fargo is that you have a moment of normalcy in the beginning. You see their lives and then horrible things happen, but it always ends with people's lives going on as they began.
So it always
has that sense at the end of each season and at the end of the show as well, at the movie as well. Yeah. Also, I wonder if a lot of people online were speculating on the Reddit forum about how if maybe that moment where Gloria is like okay in the bed was a nod towards No Country for Old Men, Because I guess it was a very similar scene.
Yes.
Where there's a character in bed that goes, okay.
It's where I believe, and it's been a little while since I saw No Country, but I believe it's fairly early in the movie where Llewellyn makes a decision to go back out and get the, or look for the money. No, because he finds the money in the day. But he goes back out at night to the site where that massacre happened.
Been a while since I've seen it.
I gotta revisit No Country, but you're right.
So that might be a nod as well.
That moment absolutely exists in that movie. So, okay, so VM Vargas made it pretty clear that he's locked Emmett in. It's like the inescapable reality is the term that he uses. And he says, you know, very, very, he says everything in almost the most sinister way possible, but he basically says, like, this is, when we're done, this is gonna make you both millionaires. Mm-hmm. And then he turns, on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Varga out.
Just smoke just gone.
In a cloud of bad breath. He's heading out.
Oh, God.
But now, you know, he's moving his people in. They threw poor Irv off of the parking garage, which, okay, now is the time to address.
Let's talk about his people.
Let's talk about Varga's guys. And, of course, now this has become a staple of Fargo stories that you've got a couple of distinctive henchmen, a two-person team.
Yeah, but that's interesting because I'm used to the distinctive henchmen that come in and they're a two-person team. This actually whole, I think, series, this whole season is about two-person teams. So I'm not surprised you have another two-person team because you have Ray and Nikki, you have Cy and Emmett, and now you have this other two-person team that's under VM Varga. But what I am surprised about is one of those two-person team is Yuri.
Yes. Yuri Gurka.
Who we get hinted at in the first episode.
Uh-huh. The Berlin prologue.
Yeah. He's the guy that obviously is the right age. So he's the guy that strangled his girlfriend and then left and left that other guy to get the heat for it. Because he moved out of the apartment and that other guy moved in. I didn't expect to see him this early on. Because of the way they set it up, I thought it was going to be like a big reveal. And it's,
yeah, I thought he would be a lot older too.
Yeah, well, they set it up that he's 22.
Oh, right, we did discuss that, his age, huh?
Yeah, so he would be in his 40s, and I think it looks like Yuri's about in his 40s.
Yeah, I guess.
He's doing pretty good for his age.
Yeah, I agree.
He maybe looks like he's in his 30s, but like,
yeah.
I guess being a Russian gangster kind of helps. But sure. I love how they're both wearing Adidas, too, and they're both like, they both look Russian, even though what are the guys?
Mimo?
Is Asian?
Yeah, he's totally Asian. Mimo, I love his name.
He's dressed like a Russian gangster.
Yeah, totally. I really enjoyed when they shove him over and he goes like this. Exactly. And then he's like, ah, and he kicks him in the shin.
I loved it with this very playful, like they're brothers.
Amazing.
Yeah.
When you're a kid and like you just want to like hit the other person, but like it's all out of love. Those little Russian gangsters.
Yeah, so like I'm surprised that they've set up this whole thing for one guy that just seems like a henchman right now. But he's about to move into the offices, so I think he's going to play a much bigger role in the actual season.
You'd think. I mean, obviously, it remains to be seen whether Yuri is actually good. The point is actually going to be Yuri himself, or whether we are just meant to read the thematic significance of that story. And we're not. I feel like we're not going to know one way or the other till the season ends, and we look back and we go, "Oh, Yuri himself was or was not specifically important."
Yeah. Right. I feel like they're setting up, like, Yuri's going to be important. Like, in that first episode. I didn't anticipate this, but I think Yuri's going to be important. And what might end up happening is in the theme of Fargo, usually you have the henchmen or the people working for a bigger, more powerful boss decide to get too big for their britches and do something on their own.
Right.
So that makes me curious if Yuri's going to turn on VM Vargo.
Well, that's just like because he's a Cossack, right? A Ukraine bully. And that's what bullies do. They're too big for their britches. Yeah.
I love that, by the way, when Irv walks up and they start talking about the Cossacks and like, oh, yeah, my Nana like ran from the Cossacks. And then Yuri was like, yeah, that was me. I like that. That was a badass move to be like those villains that everyone likes to talk about and is always a part of it. That's my family. That's we did that. I'm that villain. I'm going to sack you. And then throws him off the...
A Cossack.
Yeah.
Poor Irv.
Parking lots, man. Don't, in Fargo, don't go to parking lots.
Nothing good ever happens in parking lots.
Nothing ever goes. You're either scraping your car.
I was going to say, literally the best thing that we've ever seen happen in a Fargo parking lot is William H. Macy melting down entirely trying to scrape the ice off of his windshield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, parking lots are bad, man. I'm so glad they've become an integral part of this season.
It's bad. It's rideshare from now on. Don't park. Just get out of the car and go about your business.
We also got to talk about what could possibly be in that truck that is left.
Yeah, and what's up with the whip? Why does he need that leather whip? And he does a little pound, pound, like, all right, we're here.
You don't need a leather whip if you're shipping drugs. You don't have to whip. Those drugs aren't going to be misbehaving that badly by themselves.
And that's why when Emmett gives Cy the look and he's like, slave girls?
Slave girls?
And I'm like, that's exactly what I thought. I thought slave girls too.
Well, but also too, I feel like it speaks so much to how Emmett is so ill-suited for this world. The drugs was the thing he couldn't even say.
Right.
It never would have occurred to him to think slave girls.
Right.
Right.
Slave girls?
Slave girls?
My God, he looks so offended. And then Sai's like, maybe not.
I mean, yeah, why would you say that?
Who would say that?
I'm not saying I wanted to be slave girls. It's just, it could be.
And the second I saw him, I thought the same thing. So I'm like, why would you have to be doing? I'm like,
I thought that was maybe a character thing. Like, that character was just always going to have a whip.
Maybe, but it felt very deliberate. There was a close-up on the hand with the whip in the car. It wasn't just like, I whip out doing it. It was like dolly in on the hand and the whip in the car.
I think that was this character. This is a character.
Whip.
He's got a whip.
Give us a piece of info. Maybe. I don't know. I think it's more.
I think it's both. I hope it's both, because that's a very distinctive looking whip. I like the idea that it's almost like a totem for this person.
Right.
But it did. The way it was shot, the way that character was moving, it felt very much like this is just as much a tool of my job as this truck is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it is slave girls.
That's horrifying.
For one, that has to be like a well-insulated, heated back of a truck.
Yeah.
Or is it just some sort of goods that they're doing?
Because I think that truck is well-made. I mean, did you see the stick shift?
That's a badass stick shift.
That's a badass thing. That's all, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of a
decisive
dual truck.
Order. This is how we're doing it, you know.
That's a truck you can, like, take out and...
Yeah, take out, show the ladies. Get in my semi, look at my stick shift here.
Come for the stick shift, stay for the distinctive short whip.
Come for the stick shift, stay for the whip.
So, all right. Okay. So, I feel like we hit all the big stuff, and we're already starting to wade into predictive territory. So, why don't we just jump into predictions, unless there's anything else that you guys feel like we didn't hit? Let's just irresponsibly speculate.
Yeah.
Well... first prediction I guess I have is, this is a little spoiler for next week, is we're going to have Mac from Always Sunny in Philadelphia be a character on next week's episode.
Yeah, Rob McKelvey, which I had no clue was going to be a thing until I saw the promo.
And I love him.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's nice to see... I love how in the Fargo, these Fargo shows, that characters we don't usually think of can fit right into it. And I think he's actually a perfect match for it, because I think he has that. You know who he's actually going to remind me the most of? Is in the movie when Marge goes and sees that guy from her high school.
Yes, who's just so sad.
Who's just so sad and is just like, I've always loved you, Marge. I always love you.
Yeah.
That's who I could see him being that exact type of character.
I agree.
So I'm curious if that's where they're going, because I did see a little bit of the promo. I didn't watch very much of the next week on, and there is an extended clip online of what happens next week with Mac, but it looks like he's talking to Gloria. So I am curious if that's where they're going to go with it. Because I could see Gloria trying to meet new men and trying to date and then kind of falling flat on her face.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see for Gloria, what I think is we're just going to see more things that don't see her. Because, like, doors don't see her, phones don't hear her, what else, and how more like invisible can she get,
right.
Which I think there's going to be a lot more ways. But the one person we didn't talk about is Donnie Mashman, which is like her sidekick, right? He forgets his gun in the car in the beginning. He's like, hold up, got to get my gun. And he goes back and I'm like, dude, you are going to be the disaster that leads to, like, you're going to forget your gun or forget to, like, oh, I didn't clear that room. And then somebody dies. Like, Donnie Mashman and that name, like, Mashman.
Mashman.
People, like, men are going to be mashed with, like, their heads or something because of him. And his, like, him not knowing what to do.
Maybe.
But, like, Glory's going to save the day, but she's also just going to, I think, maintain her invisibility throughout. And I think he's going to get a lot worse, but in a beneficial way.
Yeah. I also think a reoccurring thing in the Fargo universe is that cops are either, like, great,
like the people, best cop,
the best cop, or they're the worst cop.
Yeah, but like the best personality. Like he's just sitting there. He's like, for the chief. I mean, ex-chief. I'm sorry, chief. Like he's that guy.
He does
he's
really
very
mean
lovable.
Well.
He does truly.
He's a lot like oh my god, I'm blanking on his name. Saul Goodman.
Bob Odenkirk from season one.
Mm-hmm. Well, just kind of bumbling.
Speaking of season one, I think it's so much fun that we're getting Rob McElhenney next episode because we had Glenn Howerton, who plays Dennis on It's Always Sunny, in season one. What this says to me is Fargo needs to run a minimum of 6 more years so that every other year we get a cameo from a member of the Always Sunny gang. We still got to get Charlie Day, Caitlin Olsen, and Danny DeVito on this program.
DeVito in the Fargo world.
Whoa, that would fit perfectly.
He would be like a great Mr. Big or something. Yeah. He'll be a great, like...
And if we're only going to be doling out these parts for him every other year, that means we need a minimum of 6 more years of Fargo.
Yeah. Jeez.
So, Holly, if you're watching, you get those 6 crime stories ready to go. You start firing up that stove,
better start
bro.
Prepping.
You know what I would like? I was listening to... This is a bit of a tangent. So,
okay, tangent, and we'll wrap.
Yeah, this is for future seasons, but I would love them to have a serial killer at one point. Because I was listening to an old podcast on the left episode talking about Ed Gein.
Yeah.
And he's in Wisconsin, and so he's dealing with all these Wisconsin people that are like, well, he's just an oddball, you know? He's just an oddball. And I would love to have the serial killer... Ed Gein type character who's just chopping up people wearing their skin in the Fargo universe. I think that would fit really well. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to see that for future seasons. It's not going to be anything to do with this season, but I think you can deal with the same sort of pettiness and kind of the hurt masculinity that we deal with a lot. So.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I say you have Danny DeVito play it.
Yes, perfect. Or he's the dad of the guy that's doing it. Anyways,
he's somewhere.
Okay.
So, final thoughts from either one of you, anything we didn't hit, any last little nuggets you guys want to throw out before we wrap?
I think it's just a great show. It keeps getting better, so I can't wait.
Good. Can't wait. I want more weird, blood stuff to happen with Nikki. I mean, because, like we said, I mean, she did the tampon thing, which is, like, a heightening of heightening. But, like, what is she really capable of?
Yeah.
A lot more.
I'm also curious to see what's the weird thing of this season. What's going to be the falling fish and the fish, right?
In the first season, frogs.
I get them mixed up with Magnolia. So right. It's one of those.
Magnolia had the frogs for sure.
Yeah. And then the aliens from the last season. So what's going to be, is it going to be connected to the fact that no technology can recognize Gloria, or is it going to be kind of something more out there?
Or maybe a Thaddeus Mobley type thing coming to life.
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. I hope it's not more aliens. I hope it's a different thing, but we'll see.
We're going to find out. And we're going to be here every week talking about the things that we find out. And you're going to see us make more faces like this one.
Tune in just for the faces.
Just for the faces. So until we reconvene, where can people find you guys on the internet?
You can find me at Mr. Dave Child and all the internet things, or DaveChild.com. My name is Dave Child.
Hey guys, find me on YouTube.com/Terry Erickson or on Twitter @TheTerryErickson. Instagram too. I do all the stuff.
And I am all over social media @TheLexMichael. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Join us again next week. We're going to talk about more Fargo. We love you. Mwah. Mwah.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Slave Girls?
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.